And last night's massive cyber attack, nicknamed Petya, started in Ukraine, and as it moved around the world, it froze ATMs, knocked out radiation monitoring computers at Chernobyl, hit the U.S. drug company Merck. The attack was similar to the WannaCry attack in May, and it's setting Golan Ben-Oni's hair on fire. Actually, it's adding to the flames that have been there since Golan's company, the New Jersey-based conglomerate IDT Corporation, was hit by an even worse attack in April, right after hacking tools made by the NSA, the U.S. National Security Agency, were leaked online by a group called the Shadow Brokers. The IDT attack in April and the WannaCry attack in May both used a stolen NSA weapon named Eternal Blue, which spreads ransomware. But IDT was also hit by Double Pulsar, which goes right to the heart or what's called the kernel of a computer system. Golan says ransomware attacks in which victims are asked for a few $100 in Bitcoin to unlock their frozen data are a cover for the more serious attacks. As he puts it, this is war. Golan Ben-Oni, Global Chief Information Officer at IDT, joins us now. Golan, when you heard about last night's attacks, you thought what?
Oh, boy. That was my first response. Mm-hmm. You know, we were really worried that what we saw back in April would really start to take the world by storm. And at the time, I was kind of accused of being, you know, maybe a little negative, you know, maybe this only happened to you. Mm-hmm. And one of the early indicators that this was dangerous was that it wasn't really about ransomware. What we saw did something else, which was very troubling, which essentially was that it stole credentials.
Yeah.
You know, when credentials, which are usernames and passwords, are taken, you start to worry about what's going to happen next. And this was very different from WannaCry, which essentially was just a ransomware event.
Well, and talk about how you found this. You have something like a black box that was recording this information. So it sounds to me as if, let's say that these attackers are like bank robbers. They went through the bank or your company. And as you said, they stripped all your contractors' credentials. They got past every alarm in the bank, if you will. But then after they got out, they said, give us $100 and we'll leave, when they'd already robbed the bank.
That's correct. In fact, the theft of credentials is a far more serious thing, obviously. And I like your analogy. First, you made kind of two analogies. One was a black box. You know, the easiest way to describe it would really be like a flight recorder on an airplane that will measure everything from temperature to speed and altitude. And we had the same exact thing running on the machines. And the reason we do that is that, you know, we're quite clear. There's no silver bullet in security. And if something happens, you kind of need to replay the tape and watch what happened. And it was extremely crafty. You know, it also took a look to see what other machines that system connects to, and it attempted to move laterally. And you know, we were very fortunate to have caught this so quickly that, you know, it made no further impact there.
But adding to your concerns, it wasn't spotted by any leading cybersecurity products.
That's correct. And, you know, the trouble that we're having here is that these tools were designed not to be spotted. I mean, these were created by some of the top security individuals on the planet, you know, who happened to work for the U.S. government. So the reason that this was largely successful was because it was designed to go undetected.
Yeah. Well, and the other concern, if I've got this right, is it's not just that it attacked your company, but it sort of implanted itself in other companies as well? I mean, are you saying that it went from your company and wormed its way into other companies and is just lying in wait?
Well, okay, yes and no. This had worm-like capabilities, which means that, you know, we saw it attempt to move out. But when it failed to do so, it triggered the ransomware event, which basically was kind of like the match that burned the house down. Mm. So at that point, the system essentially took itself out of service. So it did not spread any further. We did take a very close look at the systems that came to us because, again, we recorded them, and what we realized that those systems were also compromised.
You've been pursuing the IDT case with your team there at your company. And do I understand you've tracked it to a personal Android phone in Russia?
That's correct. So my team at IDT and now, you know, my new company, IOS Security or IO Security, took a look at the attack vectors. While I can't get into too much public detail about how we did so, we did find our attacker.
Well, is it an individual? I mean, what do you mean? I mean, you found a phone, but what's the next step?
Well, ordinarily, you know, when you provide this kind of detail to law enforcement, you know, it's really in their hands at that point. And it's enough basically for them to take the next step.
Okay. So you think that your attack might be tied to an Android phone out of Russia. Last night's attack, Petya, affected Russia. People were standing at ATM machines, couldn't use them.
Yes.
Who do you think this is globally?
Well, you know, here's the problem. Once the NSA tools get released, basically the first thing that's going to happen is a significant reverse engineering of that code to try and understand how it worked. And then for any interested party, they can begin to make use of that for anything they want.
Well, in fact, there's YouTube videos showing people how to use them.
That's correct. And the reality is that there are tools out there that has weaponized, you know, tools. And I can tell you that I know of 14-year-old kids that can do this.
Well, you were a 14-year-old kid who could have done this. We understand that when you were coming up, I mean, you always loved pulling apart things. And I'm reading in the New York Times, your family had to go find old typewriters so that you could pull them apart. And that you once inadvertently took down Belgium's entire phone system for 15 minutes.
Yeah, so that's true. I, at the time, was a teenager, you know, traveling between Israel, Germany, and the Netherlands. I was basically getting a lesson from a Dutch hacker about in-band signaling and how to use the blue box. And the, you know, European system used a different system than the American. It used what's called an R2 signaling system, which you basically play tones to a switch. It plays tones back. And what we didn't realize is that if you key in the wrong ones, you can actually cause the system to crash. Yeah. And the international switching infrastructure in Belgium actually went down for 15 minutes. And when we couldn't get back into it, we started making calls into the United States asking if they could contact Belgium, and no one was getting through.
Look, so you have had a sense of this for a long time. And now, as we said, your hair's on fire. You've been calling everybody, telling everybody, Microsoft, Google, Amazon. What about the patches? What about the fixes that Microsoft sends out? Now, we understand that last night it was revealed that the patches that had been sent out to sort of block this attack based on the last attack and the awareness of what was going on, either people didn't install them or didn't install them correctly in many cases. But won't that be, you know, refined? Won't eventually people just have patches to stop this?
So I have two responses to this. The first is that, you know, the attacks that we saw leveraged two NSA tools, Eternal Blue and Double Pulsar, that were addressed by Microsoft back in March. You know, if the average organization is taking 120 days to issue patches and, you know, these NSA tools get dropped and people start weaponizing them, there really isn't a lot of time to get that done. So that's one thing that we learned. But the other is that the industry has been telling everybody that all you have to do is patch. And what we've come to learn over the evening last night is that that's not always true. That it really only takes one unpatched system to get hit, and then from there it can move laterally in your organization and even affect systems that are fully patched.
Yeah.
So this is the problem now, that you can do everything everyone has told you to do and you can still be vulnerable.
Well, you had 3 firewalls, 3 antivirus solutions, and 3 intrusion detection systems, and you were hit in April. Look, you say that this is a life or death situation.
That's correct. I believe that. You know, I'd heard reports that people weren't getting surgeries in hospitals. You know, this is serious. I could tell you the risks to IoT security are extremely high. And in, you know, the medical device world, we have a new problem, which is that these systems can't even get patches. And, you know, this is a new area that really needs to be really focused on, which is the threat of IoT security, which is the next domain that's going to be a problem for us.
Internet of Things, in other words, your baby monitor.
Yeah, your heart pace monitor, or even your pacemaker.
Golan Benoni, Global Chief Information Officer at the IDT Corporation. They were cyber attacked back in April, first of the latest series of these attacks, and he's been trying to sound the alarm since then. Golan, thanks so much for talking to us.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And by the way, he says the FBI says don't pay if you have a ransomware attack. Golan's advice, first of all, back up everything. But if you haven't, make sure you know how to get Bitcoin in case you decide you do have to pay ransom.